You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Having an awful week. Well, hang in there because we are back with your favorite Avatar The Last Airbender rewatch podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Zach Muhammad, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend, Jacob Redman. Jacob, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Zach. It's been a pretty good week. I would say less productive than it should be because I'm afraid to admit that I am addicted to this Super Brawl game on my phone.
Oh, you just keep playing it, huh?
Yeah, it started off as a bit, and then I unlocked Aang, and then I unlocked Korra, and I was like, this is pretty fun, you know, I can get behind this, and now I've leveled up my my avatar to, like, level 4 or 5 or whatever it is, like 4 or 5 stars, and so I'm pretty good. I really have to stop playing it.
Is there a character that's OP? It doesn't have to be Korra or Aang, but is there, like, a character that's just so overpowered? Like, is Patrick the most powerful character in the game or something?
So there's a few different SpongeBob variants, and there's one that's like the Doodle Bob from that episode.
Oh, is it just Doodle Bob or is it SpongeBob? Oh, okay.
No, it's Doodle Bob, and Doodle Bob is pretty sick. The other person that's really good is there's like a in the Avatar State avatar. So it's like Aang in the Avatar State. I have not unlocked that one yet, but very, very hard to beat.
Oh, good to know. Good to know. Yeah, it's been a long time since a mobile game has really sunk its hooks into me. Like, I used to play Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel Links sporadically, but I don't know. The pay-to-win aspect of a lot of these modern mobile games is what turns me off on a lot of them.
Yeah, I agree. I keep getting ads that says, like, only 99 cents and you can unlock this character, and I have to just keep resisting.
Yeah, that's my issue with all these games. No, save. I'll never spend money on any of these things. Yeah. But yeah, Jacob, you were telling me on the pre-show you were on Robin, Akiva, and Nita podcast, which I did not know. And you were on the Am I the A-Hole episode for the uninitiated listeners. But so before we get into this Avatar stuff, can you briefly outline the dispute you and Lydia had? Maybe I'll provide my take right here, right now.
Yeah, so minor spoilers for the AITA episode that I was on, at least my segment. So I am addicted to cracking my knuckles. I do it all the time. Maybe actually if you're like a careful listener of this podcast, you might be able to hear it sometimes.
Really? I've never heard it on any other thing.
That actually might just be Maddie, our editor, doing a fantastic job. I would not be surprised if she's just putting in hard
work. Maybe she just like, damn Jacob and his damn knuckles cracking every time I'm editing them out of the episode.
Maybe she's
just like cussing you under her breath the whole time while she edits. Who knows?
I would not be shocked. But the dispute was, I really want to crack Lydia's knuckles, and I think that I should get to at least sometimes a day, and she does not like to. So that was the discussion, was like, how could I crack her knuckles? And essentially they said that we should come to trades. So like anything that she wants to do that I don't want to do, we can just trade for knuckle cracks.
Is there a reason you want to crack her? Is it like that's my kind of where I'm yes, lost a little bit.
Sure. So I'm happy to break it down a little bit more.
Okay,
so
perfect.
The feeling of cracking knuckles is like really satisfying. Like it's like it's just like anything that's like, I don't know, that someone's mildly addicted to.
I can see that. I understand. But what's the appeal? So you just like cracking anybody's knuckles? There's something about Lydia's knuckles in particular.
No. Anyone's knuckles would do, but mine take time to like recharge before they're ready to crack again.
I get it. So it's like a stress ball or something.
Exactly.
Is it like a toy you could buy, like a knuckle cracker, like prosthetic hand maybe you could just
That's
keep on
not
the
a
table
bad idea.
Instead
That's
of like a stress ball, you just have this like hand that you can crack its knuckles at any time. Maybe you could find one that doesn't even need to recharge like a filthy human. So
yeah, that's not a bad idea. See, I was about to ask if
I don't know if that's the best idea, but you're too kind, Jacob.
No, I was about to ask if I could crack your knuckles. I think Akiva asked if you would let me. What do you think, Zach? What are my chances here?
I can see why Lydia would have reservations, because just is such an odd request. I mean, sure, I don't really care. For me, it's like, I used to crack my knuckles a lot. Now I rarely crack them. I've been cracking them now while we're talking, just cause. Yeah. So when you crack your knuckles, the listeners can't see this, but do you just crack these, or do you crack, like, you can crack the joints in the fingers as well? Like, so, the top of the fingers, I mean.
So I would say I'm an equal opportunity cracker. Mm-hmm. So I definitely will, like, crack the small knuckle between, like, the actual, like, part of your finger. Yes. And, like, yeah, the main part.
Because a lot of people don't crack that part. Fun fact.
No, I'm all for it. I'll crack them all. And then, I've actually found some, like, other ones. Like, if I push on my wrist, I can crack that. Like, I'm pretty experienced.
Do you crack your neck, too?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah, sometimes I'll crack my neck on the podcast, and I feel like that's pretty noisy. So I try not to do it, because I did it a couple of times in earlier episodes. Like, when you're in mid-sentence, and I'll just start, like, listening, but I'm, like, cracking my neck and doing stuff. Well, yeah. I think, I don't know if the audience has had enough of this joint cracking discussion. If you want to listen to more, you can check out Jacob on his appearance on Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, and the Rob Has a Podcast main feed. That episode should be great with Puya. I haven't listened to it in full yet. I only listened to the first 10 minutes, so I'm excited to get into that, but I'm also excited to get into this episode of Avatar, Book 2, Episode 4, correct? The Swamp.
Yes.
I really enjoyed this episode, actually. More so, this episode for me was kind of like the deserter, in the sense that I didn't, like, have too much of an opinion on it when I first watched it, and watching it on this rewatch, I came to appreciate it more than I did even in my first watch. I don't know if you felt similarly, Jacob.
No, I felt pretty similarly. I feel like this is an episode which, like, gets a fair amount of praise, and I've never really seen why.
I was always kind of indifferent on this, similar to my feelings about May last week. I was always kind of indifferent to this episode. I could see Jacob's look of disapproval. Hey, you slowly convinced me that, like, May is a very good, redeemable character. Like, I'm open to change, and I'm willing to listen.
Yeah, she's like an A-tier character. She's quite good. But I agree. Like, this episode of Avatar is always, like, you know, talked about as great. I think that people really like the swamp people.
Who is it? Felipe, who said it was the most overrated episode of Avatar? And I don't know about that, because I don't know if it's highly rated enough to be classified as, like, overrated almost.
Yeah. So this was happening.
That's kind of a hot take.
Yeah. In the Facebook discussions thread, that's what Felipe was saying, that this is the most overrated episode of the show. And then Sarah responded and said, I didn't know that this was ever highly rated TV.
I'm Team Sarah there. She spoke my thoughts, honestly.
And Audrey came over the top and said, who have you ever heard or ever spoken to that's regarded it highly? So I think that there's a little bit of shade thrown to Felipe, but I actually agree with Felipe. I think I have heard this episode be talked about as like one of the better ones. And while I think it's actually pretty good on a rewatch, when I first watch it, or when I watch this on like in a binge, when I'm watching a lot of episodes at a time, this one's kind of like, okay, yeah, like, you introduced Toph, but can we just, like, get to the Blind Bandit?
I think everybody's like that, but that's just because the Blind Bandit is such a good episode, especially on a binge, because the Blind Bandit, with all the wrestling and all the stuff going on, it's so unlike a lot of the episodes in season 2, and I think that's why, myself included, a lot of people love the Blind Bandit. But I mean, that's doing this episode a little bit of a disservice comparing, like, but yeah, I do kind of see where you're coming from, because I too feel similarly on binges. I'm like, can we just get to Toph's, like, actual true introduction rather than the spirit of Toph just, like, running away in the swamp forest? So that is a fair criticism, but I also feel like it's doing this episode a little bit of a disservice.
I agree. Like, I think if this was, you know, any earlier in the series, I'd probably like it more.
I think so too. And I think more people would like, if this was like a season one episode, I feel like people would enjoy it, because I think it might even be better than the average season one episode. Whereas you can't say the same about it relative to some of the standouts from season two.
Yeah. No, I agree with that take. Mm-hmm. And I think we're pretty simpatico here. So let's just jump into the episode.
True. Yeah, let's jump right in. I'm down.
Yeah, so we start with a nice Earth Kingdom village. It's just a little bit of hustle and bustle in the city. And as we zoom down to the Earth Kingdom village, we see we cut to Iroh and Zuko sitting just on a mat with an ostrich horse right behind them.
The ostrich horse that they stole. Yeah.
Yeah, the one they had stolen. And it looks like they're just begging. They're on the street asking people for money as people walk by. This is rough, you know, real fall from grace for Iroh and Zuko here.
Yeah, and Zuko's very unhappy, you can tell. He says they're royalty, they shouldn't be doing stuff like this, people should be bowing to them and all that. But Iroh, I'll give him credit, he's good at playing the role of the sad old homeless man. And Iroh almost seems to, like, relish in this role. Yeah. Like, when he's getting money from this lady, he, like, shoots her a sly smile and he's able to get the coins. And even the thing with Iroh relative to Zuko especially is that one thing about Iroh, he doesn't mind being made a fool of. He doesn't care if people like see him as the butt of the joke, whereas Zuko absolutely hates that, especially when he's the butt of one of Iroh's jokes. And that's where they differ as characters, and it's very interesting when you see them play in a scene like this.
Yeah, I think Uncle Iroh's very confirmed with who he is and how much self-worth he has, so it doesn't really matter if they have, you know, this random guy saying, you know, you need to dance for this gold coin or this.
But we should get into this lady comes, a couple people give them gold coins, but this random man tells Iroh, he says, dance for your money. And then he starts slashing at Iroh's feet with a sword. And then he's like, nothing like a fat man dancing for his dinner, while Iroh sings this song. And then I have a question for you. What did you think of Iroh's song? Because while his singing was not great, I did enjoy how, like, first he's singing a cappella, and then, like, the background music comes in when he starts dancing. I thought that was a nice little editing choice from the set people and sound design of Avatar.
Yeah, I was just not a huge fan of the song. You know, the song is about, like, how pretty the girls are in Ba Sing Se. And, like, you know, Ba Sing Se is a very impressive city. And we'll get there in a few episodes. But I don't think that we need to, like, objectify these girls in Ba Sing Se. Like, let them live their life. Like, Uncle Iroh, come up with better songs. Like, why not, like, the flowers of Ba Sing Se are so pretty.
Damn, shots fired by Jacob. I don't know. It seemed like just generic songwriting with me was more my issue. I don't know if the objectification of women was that horrible, especially compared to the modern songs of our time. So yeah. I don't know. I didn't have too much of a gripe with that myself, but it is a valid criticism nonetheless.
It just seems like if you're going to make up a song, you know, why not make it about something like fun and not like the girls there kiss so sweet. Like Uncle Iroh's never gotten a kiss from a girl from Ba Sing Se. So he's just like, I don't know. If you're going to make up a song, make something more fun.
Okay, fair. And then did you like the narrative choice they made to have Iroh and Zuko just in the scene at the top and then in the final scene of the episode? Because I think that was smart. That way they could fit in the whole plot in the swamp and then it didn't feel too rushed. So I did enjoy that.
Yeah, I agree. I do think that maybe we could have had like one more scene with them, like in the middle of the episode where we see like, you know, Zuko maybe like, I don't know, get the blue spirit mask back again. Because it looked like it was on the cart at the beginning of the episode that was passing by.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, like, good eye. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah. So maybe like he could have like taken that blue spirit mask again. Maybe he like Uncle Iroh could have tried to talk him out of robbing the guy with swords. I feel like we could have gotten one more thing that maybe would have made their story make sense. But ultimately, I like that it wasn't so much cross-cutting. Like we really were in the swamp this episode. The swamp is really what was important. And yeah, I don't think that this, the like side plot, the B story mattered that much.
You think Shut Up Tim is a big Avatar guy and was enjoying this episode because of the swamp a la, because it's from Shrek? Like, was he just a big swamp enthusiast? Do you think he enjoyed this episode somewhere?
Yeah, I'm sure that, you know, this is the episode that he just rewatches, you know, in his headcanon, like, Shrek's just around the corner.
What bender would Shrek be? Should we stop down?
let's think about that. So,
I feel like Shrek would be an earthbender. I feel like conventional wisdom might state firebender because he does have quite a temper, but I feel like Shrek actually is just an earthbender. He does enjoy like the nature around him and stuff. I'd have him as an earthbender, but I'd have to stop down and actually think about it.
I think I agree. I think I'd be hard pressed to see who's the firebender in that group if it's not going to be Shrek. But
would it not be Puss in Boots? I mean, maybe you know what? This could be a future quartet, okay. Shrek gang.
Okay,
so
yeah,
we won't get too far down this rabbit hole, but we'll save that for a time. Maybe like I don't know if Shut Up Tim even watches Avatar movies. We could just call him and have him on that segment or something.
Okay,
like the last 5 minutes. But let's move on here. I mean, as fun as Shrek is to talk about, so Team Avatar, they're flying over the swamp, and you can already tell, like even from the first shot, you can tell something's off about this swamp. It like glows a little bit while Aang is looking down, and then and right, but before anyone even says anything about the swamp, you can already tell something's a little off about this swamp.
Yeah, it does seem like a bit odd. You know, Aang is usually like able to understand what spirits are telling him, or he's able to like tap into that. And here, Aang just seems like entranced by this swamp. Like mm-hmm. Sokka notices it pretty quickly. Like, why are you taking us down? Like, why are we essentially landing here? And Aang just like doesn't even notice. And it does seem like the swamp has some sort of like glimmer to it, which makes it pretty appealing.
Yeah, because Aang says, he says, the swamp is calling to me and I think it wants us to land there. And then the gang has this dilemma because Aang states, he's like, Bumi wants me to listen to the earth and now I can actually hear the earth. And he says, he's like basically saying he should follow that hunch. But Katara says the swamp feels ominous. And Sokka says, like, yeah, even Appa and Momo don't want to be here. So Aang is basically outnumbered 4-1, even though he wants to land in the swamp. And he concedes and they start to fly away until a tornado appears like out of nowhere, pretty much. And basically, just right on Appa's tail, it hits all of them, and it separates the team. They all crash land into the swamp, and it separates Appa and Momo from Aang, Katara, and Sokka.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to stop down on here mm-hmm. is that, so Sokka says, like, that the Appa and Momo don't even want to go here. Do you actually think that's true? I assume that Momo doesn't really care. Like, maybe Appa doesn't, because he doesn't like being in confined spaces. But I thought this was like reading into it a bit much.
I think Appa has like a roar of affirmation. It's a little unclear, to be honest, because I thought something similar myself. Like, do yeah. Appa and Momo even care? But if you look at the time Appa has in the swamp, if we just look ahead a little yeah. bit and how he's getting captured and chased by Do and Cho, I feel like Appa probably didn't want to go in the swamp, honestly. Yeah. So I did kind of, and Aang agrees. Like, when Aang doesn't like try to confront Sokka on that point, Aang actually does start to fly away. So, and Aang knows Appa better than anybody. So I feel like Aang could sense that Appa did not want to go down here.
Yeah, this seems like...
But it was a little unclear.
This is like one of my biggest pet peeves, though, is when people are always like, oh, hey, like this animal or this baby thinks this, when like you can't possibly know that.
We've talked about this on the podcast, and I completely agree with you. It's so annoying with people and their dogs. It's like, especially when they have like a dog that's like so not well behaved and just like crappy. And then they're trying to like, oh, my dog thinks it's like, your dog doesn't think about anything. So like chewing shoes and stuff. So, I don't know.
Exactly. Attributing like so much motivation to Appa and Momo here is just like another instance.
You're right. But I think Appa and Momo at least show more emotion than the average domesticated animal. Like, they do show, like, they are kind of anthropomorphized in a way within Avatar. So I don't necessarily mind that with those two animals in particular, but in general, I have the same pet peeve as you. Yeah. I don't like it normally.
That's fair.
We're in the same boat.
One funny joke here. So after the tornado is like flying at them, and Appa is like trying to get away, Aang says like yip yip, and Sokka says you better throw an extra yip in there. And I think that's like a funny joke, that the more yips is how fast Appa goes. So like someone who's just like yip 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 yip, it's just like zooming, like you're hyper
speed. Yeah, Appa's just moving at like the speed of sound, just like at Sonic the Hedgehog level speeds. Everything yeah. just like spam the yips. No, I did enjoy that joke as well. And there's another funny joke right when they land, or it's not even a joke, but Katara says, oh, Sokka, you've got an elbow leech. And I just have this note here. Man, that's a huge ass leech. Holy.
I know. Yeah.
That was a big.
Sokka's like, where is it? And he's like, it's on your, or like, I think Katara like responds sassy, like, where do you think it is? But like, how could he not tell? Like, this elbow leech has to weigh a few pounds. Like, if there are a few pounds weighing on my arm, I think I'd be able to tell.
Excuse me. Oh my. Just my apologies. Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. It looked like a leech, but it looked just huge. Like, it did not, it wasn't like one of those portmanteau animals we normally see in Avatar. It was just like this, like, 4-foot leech hanging off of his elbow. Like, if I saw a leech like that, I'm not scared of leeches normally. If I saw like a 4-foot leech, I'd be horrified.
See, I'm actually scared of most bugs. If I saw that, like a 4-foot leech, I would just be, like, peeing my pants, running the other direction.
That's fair. Man, there's a lot of bugs in this episode, honestly, that we get gratuitous close-ups of. It's not like early SpongeBob bad of like disgusting close-ups, but it's close. Like that bug he's chomping on later, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about it. But
pretty nasty. Yeah. Zach, I had one question for you. Are you mm-hmm. someone that mosquitoes like to latch onto a lot? Like,
yes.
I know.
You are.
Yeah. And it's annoying. I've got lucky actually. The past couple of summers, I've been mostly inside due to work and other things. So I haven't been chewed up by mosquitoes, but I remember when I was younger, like I play a lot of basketball outdoors and I get a lot of mosquito bites. And my mom would be like, oh, you got to shower. Otherwise, I mean, that's why the mosquitoes are biting you because you're not clean. And I was like, that's the, as I grew older, I was like, that's the most untrue stuff I've ever heard in my life. Mosquitoes are actually attracted to blood types. So mosquitoes like certain types of blood, which I learned in my old age, contrary to what my mom told me as a child. But yeah, mosquitoes are annoying to me. What about you, Jacob?
Yeah, I had never heard the cleanliness thing. That feels like a good excuse.
It's one of those things where like, your parents tell you something, you believe it at face value until you grow up and you're like, damn, that was not true.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's one of those things that, like, you just accept, but then once you think back on it, you're like, no, I don't think that's exactly right. But no, mosquitoes aren't a huge fan of me. I feel like I'm usually able to get, go outdoors, and maybe I'm, like, bugged a little bit, but if I'm near anyone else, I feel like they're going to them first. So
continue.
I know now that you're a great person to go camping with if they're all attracted to you.
Yeah, and mosquitoes are the only bugs I'll actually kill because I'm not a vegetarian or anything like that, but I am a pacifist and made my nature. So whenever there's like a spider or something in the house, I'll usually like capture the spider and release it outside. Mosquito I'll kill right away because it's harming me. I feel like I'm able to come to that rationalizing. Like, there's no capture. Mosquitoes on my shoulder sucking blood. I'm smacking that. So
yeah. Yeah.
There we go. Little mosquito chat in the middle of the podcast. So then, we cut to Appa and Momo in Avatar, and Appa's tied up by a bunch of vines, but Momo's able to free him. Look at Momo being actually a good friend to Appa here, saving him from all these vines, even though Appa sticks the landing from this huge fall, tries to fly away, and then gets stuck in some vines again. So rough go of it for Appa here.
Yeah, Momo and Appa are a good tag team. You know, you have the comically big animal and the really small animal. And between the two of them, like, I feel like they could get a lot of things done. You know,
I agree, because usually the small animal is like useless in these things, like especially in cartoons, like the big animal does like all the work. But Momo's like very nifty, very nimble, and he does a lot of things for Appa in this episode. And even when they're racing away from Do and Show, like Momo does a good job providing Appa with some support there. So that's a very good observation.
I think they're a decent team. I would not mind watching some episodes of just their misadventures. I feel like they could get into some fun.
Yeah, and I kind of wish Avatar explored that a little more, because we do get the Appa's Lost Days, which is a fantastic episode focusing on Appa, but I kind of imagine if it's like Appa and Momo's Lost Days. I feel like we kind of could have had even more there, honestly, because the Appa and Momo dynamic of just them two together is actually not something we get very often. This is one of the few instances of it, like a whole storyline was just those two, I guess because the show is always focused on Iroh and Zuko as well, so it's fair, of course. There's not much time to insert Appa and Momo together, but I liked it in this episode.
Yeah, I thought that it played pretty well to have the animals be the B story here. But going back to the main story, we see Sokka is going around. He's just cutting all of the like different vines and branches with his sword. He's really just trying to cut through and get somewhere. I'm not really sure where he's headed. It seems like if he went the other direction, there's like no need to cut anything. Like there's like tons of open space, but instead he's like going further into the swamp. So like Aang tells him like be nicer to the swamp. But I think take a step back and just like you don't know where you're going. Like why pick the direction which is so hard to get around? Like go in the empty direction.
Which is funny because we saw like cartographer Sokka a couple of episodes ago, just setting up the map in the cave and stuff. Yet here, you're right, he is just hacking willy-nilly. And then Sokka and Aang have the age-old debate of if plants can feel or not. And then Jacob, where do you fall in this argument?
Well, so Katara says, like, this place feels alive, which, like, made me think, like, yeah, because all plants are alive. Like, that's actually, that seems
true.
Like,
Sokka and Katara, yeah, they had some pretty redundant lines here, to be honest.
Yeah, that seemed pretty obvious to me. But I think it's, like, objectively proven that plants can feel something. So definitely, like, plants can feel stuff, but, you know, if I had to, like, you know, cut down a branch in order to get where I needed to go, you know, I'd cut the branch. Maybe I'd first try to move it aside and try to get around it, but...
Well, not that I know anything about biology or plants, but that tree in the center of the swamp is huge. So, like, cutting off a branch, I don't know, that's like cutting off, like... a little hair off somebody's head, I feel like. Like, no way that huge tree central to the swamp with all its tendrils is really feeling that. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that probably is true that they're not going to be able to feel it. But it does seem like the like swamp monster that ends up following them through this episode is able to track them down. So potentially, like, if you're connected to the swamp, you can feel like who's or like what's getting cut.
Well, you're right, because this tree, and we're skipping ahead a little bit, but this tree is not like a normal tree in like the world. It has like some spiritual properties, we'll say. It's almost like that. I don't know if you ever seen Pocahontas, like that tree she talks to, like that old lady spirit tree, which I always kind of liked. So it's similar to that in that regard. Like this tree's got some like spiritual powers, I would say. It's not your average run of the mill tree. A little say than give say that.
No, that's definitely not true. It's not the average tree. I'd say in terms of special trees, it's up there with the giving tree and others like
that. Yes. So we cut back to Appa and Momo very briefly because they're just wandering, and poor Appa. Appa's like, he's tired. He passes out, presumably of exhaustion and hunger. You can only just feel sympathy for him here. And then meanwhile, Momo just finds the whistle that they usually call Appa with, the little bison whistle, and then just starts like blowing into it repeatedly. And I can only imagine if this was a dog and you're like blowing this high pitched whistle that the dog is sensitive to, basically right beside its head. Like, I can see why Appa is not happy here, because he just crushes Momo for spamming this whistle, just like slaps him with his tail.
Yeah, it is pretty funny when Appa just like absolutely flattens Momo with his tail. Like, that was a good joke.
It's pretty hard. I mean, I guess he was quite frustrated with the whistle blowing. Yeah, because he does crush him.
I agree with it there. Have you ever used like one of the apps that can produce like a really high pitched tone?
Not in many years, because I hate that high pitched tone. Honestly, I think my ears like are sensitive to some of those noises. Yeah. I don't know, because sometimes even I'll just be walking around my house and there'll be like some electronic device or something, and I'll hear it like that high pitched like squeal almost. Yeah, I never liked that.
So me and my sister used to do this to each other all the time, where we'd like play it in the background. And the perfect thing is, if you're using a high pitched tone, your parents can't hear it. So like, mm-hmm. I would be sitting there like pressing the tone. My sister would be like, stop it, Jacob, stop it. And I'd be like, what, Mom? Like, I'm not doing anything. And my mom's like, yeah, I don't hear anything. And my sister's just like, no, I hear it. I hear it. And usually it ended with my sister flattening me, similar to how Appa flattened me.
Damn, Jacob tormented his poor. I assume she did the same to you, though, so no big deal. That is pretty funny.
All the time. But that was a great prank. That was like one of the better ones, because, you know, no one else can hear it except the two of us because we were young.
No, that's true. That's pretty dastardly on your part. We had a little evil genius, Jacob, there.
I'm telling you, I'm the firebender here.
True. I learn more every day. So yeah, we cut back to Team Avatar. And first, there's this bird that has like this like horrifying human scream. Why'd they include this?
Yeah,
this was the one thing that was weird. It's almost like a jump scare in a show, but it seemed like so pointless, I feel like. Because you see Team Avatar, you see like, you hear this human scream and they just pan out. And it's just this bird on a branch that can somehow make screams like a human.
Yeah, so at first, like, there's a bunch of gas. They smell it and it smells like pretty nasty. And then we get this like awful screech. And I don't know how this got past the writer's room, because like, I mean, I guess it's like interesting, but like that, it's just annoying. Apparently I had my volume up too high, because when it happened, when it played, I was like covering my ears, because it like surprised me a bit. I was not a fan of that bird. That bird is canceled.
Well, it was just so random to have slotted in there. Like, I guess they wanted it because, like, ooh, the ominous, but I don't know. I enjoyed this episode as a whole, but I thought we could do without this horrifying, screeching bird. So,
yeah,
we go.
I just kind of think, like, it's hard to make the episode that scary because it is a children's show. And so, like, mm-hmm. if they can have, like, oh, a bird that screams, like, that's probably as scary as they can get without.
Yes, like, no, you're probably really right. And they do a good job this episode of like, they don't try to make it necessarily scary. They just try to make it like eerie. They hold the whole time the episode, they want you to feel like something's off. And I actually think they do a good job setting the tone of the episode overall. But just this little bird, that's just my minor gripe with it. And then so they're talking about, so Sokka says, he's like, I asked the swamp if it feels pain. He said it's fine. He said the swamp said it's fine. So I like how Sokka anthropomorphizes the swamp a little there, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, Sokka's just out here disrespecting the swamp. And you know what? Like, most of the time that's fine. But in the Avatar universe, I feel like you have to put a little respect on everything, just because there are spirits that'll, like, you know, destroy you if you destroy stuff. Like the Heibai, had its forest burned down, and the Heibei was like abducting people left and right. Like, I don't know. I wouldn't take my chances if I was Sokka.
No, I agree with you. And I think Sokka is too, like, you've seen so much stuff. Maria kind of touched on this in the feedback, and maybe we'll go into more detail later when we get into it. But how is Sokka so distrusting of like spirits and spiritual power? Like, you travel with the Avatar. We're in book two already. Like, you've seen all sorts of crazy stuff happen to people. Like, you've seen the Avatar turn into a giant fish monster and like take out a fleet of 100 stuff. Like, I understand if like episode one, book one, Sokka is thinking like this, but at this point he should be a little more wary of like evil spirits. So I completely co-sign what you're saying. You're 100% correct.
I agree with you. You know, let's just jump into like Maria's comment now, because I do think it's like very valid, and it already is like coming up. So she just said like, I think you guys have touched on this before, but man, Sokka is awfully skeptical for someone who lives in a world with spirits and what is essentially magic exist. And this is something that we said in the pilot, because he was talking to Katara about like, oh, the magic water. And like, you know, maybe you can say, okay, then he was just like a sheltered South Pole kid. Like, he hasn't seen much.
You can excuse the premiere Sokka for some of the stuff he says. But now, like, come on, we're so deep into the series. How much crazy stuff have you seen already?
Exactly. Like, he's seen all of these things. He's seen the spirit world. He understands, like, he's seen Roku's body inhabit Aang and like burn an entire temple to the ground. Like, as soon as you see that, like, having a swamp that might be living, like, that's
exactly. He sees Yue's spirit in this episode, or he sees like a hallucination of Yue. You literally saw a woman you love turn into a moon spirit to save the world, and now you're questioning if this swamp can be alive. I mean, you've seen much more insane things than this swamp. So not to get too on my high horse here, but no, I don't know how Sokka is so skeptical.
I think you're totally right. And Maria like really summed it up quite well.
Yeah, no, Maria summed it up great.
But back to the episode. So Katara is like standing around, and they sort of like are a bit sketched out. And I think Katara is the one that first mentioned it. She's like, do you think we're being watched? And of course, Sokka's like, oh no, there's no chance that we're being watched. And then the buzzing fly around them turns into a giant ball of light. It then flies up into the like trees, and then everything turns into eyes around them. It's like all of the bugs just like turn into creeping eyes, and they're like, uh-oh. And that was like, that was actually one of the creepiest things in this episode.
Yeah, I thought so too. I was wondering, like, was it all the bugs, or was it just a bunch of animals in the bushes with glowing eyes? I wasn't 100% sure to me. Or was it just the swamp with another hallucination? Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm not totally sure what it was, but this is one of the creepier moments. And I think it does a good job again. Like, yes, it is a children's show, but the whole time I'm also kind of like creeped out just a bit. Like,
yeah, no, they do a good job setting like the vibe. It's almost like the beginning of for this whole episode is like kind of like the beginning of a horror movie, but they don't get into the actual horror where the whole episode's like kind of eerie. They have like that dark tone, monochromatic with the whole swamp aesthetic. They do a good, I think the overall, I enjoyed like the music design and the design overall of this episode.
Yeah, I agree. So after it comes back from like what would have been a commercial break, we go to Appa and Momo, who are both trying to get a night's rest on the branch. It seems like Appa is just like conked out. Like Appa seems like he's like a bit asleep, although like he's growling at points, and maybe he's having a night terror.
He's not having a night terror. What is happening is like, so there's animals in the swamp, like the same animals that we're watching. The animals won't shut up. They keep making noises, and Appa, I presume, was tired and hungry. So Appa lets loose this huge roar, and then all the animals like quiet. So Appa just roared so he could go back to sleep, I think is what ends up happening here.
Okay, that makes more sense. That's pretty relatable. Yeah.
That's what I have in my notes at the very least. So gotcha. That was my interpretation of it. I could be wrong.
No. That seems right. But Momo the whole time is just like frantically running around. And that's me when I can't fall asleep. I'm just up like, what can I do to go to bed?
Really? I'm the complete opposite. I'll just like lay in bed just like angry at my inability to fall asleep until I eventually do. So
yeah, I'd say
very different like, in that regard.
In terms of sleeping, it probably is my worst trait. I'm so bad at going to bed.
Really? When I'm tired, it's easy to fall asleep. And we all struggle with this with the blue light and stuff. We're all looking at our phones, looking at our computers. So I feel like in the modern day, everyone struggles to go to sleep at the best times.
Yeah, no, that is definitely true.
So we right now is here where we get to introduce to Duin Tho. Is this what happens, or is this where they get attacked by like the vines while they sleep?
Yeah. So then we go back to another group that can't sleep, and we see Aang, Katara, and Sokka first. Mm-hmm. They're all around the campfires. The campfires like dying. We start to see like someone watching them from like a bunch of vines, which we'll later find out is like a person in the swamp monster. But for now, we don't know what's going on. The campfire is dying out, and we see that everyone is being like taken hold of by this vine monster. So a vine goes up Sokka's leg, and by the time that we get back, all of them have vines all around them, totally captured. And we get a bit of like a chase scene here.
Yeah, and these vines are quite persistent. They don't stop even after they get slashed. Like,
that is definitely true. Yeah, this creepy plant thing is like taking control of all of them. And it's kind of cool here that we see all of them fight in their different styles. So we see Sokka hacking at the vines. You know, he's using his machete, just trying to yank himself away. He's just like, you know, going at it directly. Then Katara is using a bunch of water whips, essentially, to get free.
Yeah, and she's love this, like, Matrix-style shot. Sorry to interrupt, but I like this Matrix-style shot of Katara. So she's, like, whipping the vines, and it's, like, the camera or, like, the art is, like, going fully around her, and you get, like, a 360 angle, and I thought that was very dope. Katara's waterbending this whole episode was just amazing. I'm really excited to get into the later fight with the full swamp monster because she uses some very interesting waterbending techniques.
Yeah, yeah. She definitely uses some techniques that I don't think we've seen before, and they're
no, I don't think so either.
But yeah, so Katara's using the water web, and Aang uses like an air bubble. This was the most creative use to get away from the plants, I think, because like there's like a little bit of space around him, and then he creates a giant air bubble, and it like causes all of the vines to like go like a few feet away from his body, so he's able to just jump away, and he starts jumping through the trees.
Yeah, and he uses this air bubble shield a lot, and it's a very good technique. I think he used it against the Yuuyan archers as well. Like at one point, all shoot their arrows at him, and he has like this air bubble shield almost.
Talk about Matrix-like. Has a very,
pardon me?
Talk about Matrix-like.
True, but yeah, a lot of Matrix. I wonder how Aang and Katara would fare with Neo and the gang in the Matrix. They probably do a great job holding their own, I feel like.
Yeah, I think the Matrix has to win, right? Like, if you can essentially like control how like time works, then I think that you can beat any elements coming at you.
True, and I think like especially if they're stuck, like if they're one of the people with like the things on their head, then yeah, they're kind of. If they're in the real world, they're fine, but the Matrix would probably win, sadly.
Yeah, well, speaking of people who would get beaten by others in the Matrix, now we get to the swamp people. We get Appa's footprint, which is, you know, a pretty large footprint. And we see two different people. One is very tall and quite skinny. And the other one is short and a little on the tubby side.
He's a portly little chap.
Yes, I know portly chap is one of your favorite descriptors here, but
it's just funny because it's just such a funny way to describe a fat person. Shout out Tyson on Survivor, because when he described Boston Rob like that, it just cracked me up. I've always tried to incorporate that into my vernacular going forward.
Nice, I appreciate that. Both of these people are wearing loincloths and not much else, and they have a leaf hat on their head. Which can't possibly do that much. Like when it's raining, the leaf hat definitely gets you wet. And when it's sunny, like you can see right through the leaf hat. So I don't understand the point of that, but you can immediately recognize.
I don't understand a lot about these characters or these guys, to be honest, but we'll get into it. So Jacob, what were your initial thoughts on Duin Tho?
Yeah. Yeah. As I was about to say, like you can immediately recognize like these people live in the swamp. Like they kind of draw from like the Cajun type people that are like, you know, swamp people like living there, just having a good time. Yeah, I think they're fun characters. It's like an interesting use of building out the lore, and having these swamp benders be water benders as well leads to some nice jokes later on. But I think it's interesting that we can see, you know, it's not just water benders in the North and South Pole, but we also have these like swamp benders, and it kind of shows like, oh yeah, like, you know, we've only shown you like water bending where people live in ice, but it exists in all forms. And this is like one of the most unique ones.
And it's cool. I wonder how, like, in the overall Avatar lore, how these swamp benders, like, eventually got separated from either the Northern Water Tribe or the Southern Water Tribe. Because later on in the episode, they say they're kin with Katara. And that kind of got me thinking. I was like, oh, wow, these were actually, once upon a time, these people were, like, part of an actual waterbending tribe. And then they just seceded and, like, started living in the swamp for some reason.
Well, if anyone's going to secede, it makes sense why the people from the Deep South would. So,
Oh, nice joke there.
My guess is that, you know, at one point the Avatar universe was like an ice planet and everyone was a waterbender. And then, like, you know, it went back and, like, the ice went just to the poles and some of the people stayed behind and stayed swampbenders instead.
Interesting. I don't know if that's factual, but I'll take your word for it.
I would go ahead and say there's 0% chance that's real, but it makes sense.
That's some interesting headcanon lore. Yeah. We'll take it. Why not?
Yeah, but they see these giant footprints, and they've decided that whatever's at the end of the trail is good enough to eat. So that's what their purpose is.
Which is kind of surprise crazy, because I understand if you see Appa and you decide he's edible, but how can you tell something's edible? What if this was, like, I don't know, like a huge, like, reptile or something? Like, I get that they see a paw footprint, but how can they tell that this is something edible just from the footprint? I guess maybe they're, like, master hunters or trackers. They just know it's going to be some tasty meat on the end of this footprint trail, but I was kind of surprised that they were that sure of themselves that it was going to be a tasty meal at the end of this.
I mean, these people are mostly eating bugs. So I would say that anything that's, like, you know, moving around with enough mass to, like, leave that footprint is probably going to be tastier than a bug.
But they don't eat any of these gators, which in real life they eat gators. So it's kind of weird. Like, I know in Australia, people have, like, crocodile burgers and stuff like that. So,
yeah, I don't know. You know, it is a funny plot point, though, that these people are trying to eat Appa. I like that.
True.
That
and speaking, we'll cut back to Momo and Appa now, because Momo lands on, like, what they give the name for these, but it's like this half crocodile, half fish. What was the term for it again?
Yeah,
I have it, like, deeper into my notes, but basically Momo lands on one of these and then it starts, like, to try and, like, to eat him and attack him. And Appa, like, chomps on it out of self-defense and, like, just basically bites its head. And then it, like, recoils and runs away, because we always, this episode, they just cut back to Appa and Momo and you get, like, a brief little snippet of what's going on their little adventure, and then we cut back to the main gang.
Yeah, so we see, I believe it's a catfish crocodile, because it has those long whiskers like it's a catfish. And yeah, it's pretty funny, you know, like, Momo obviously would get wrecked by this catfish crocodile or alligator. I'm not sure the difference myself. Appa will just body it. Like, Appa essentially, like, eats the entire thing in one bite and then just spits it out because it's not even interested. So
yeah, so I looked later in my notes. So these are called cat, at least is what Doo calls them at one point, cat gators.
You know? Okay.
That's such a weird term. I don't know if I love that term for it, but yeah, that's what they call them.
No, I think that's like a catfish alligator. That makes sense to me.
It does make sense, but cat, I feel like they could have used a better term for them. I don't know, cat gator is kind of, like, lazy compared to the other terms for animals they have in Avatar.
Yeah, usually they're just, like, two animals named back to back, so I don't mind.
Yeah, this whole scene kind of felt like some wild nature documentary. Like, I almost felt like I could hear Richard Attenborough just commenting, like, giving the documentary style. Like, the lemur goes in on the cat gator, but the large sky bison comes in and defends his symbiotic partner, the lemur. So I thought this whole thing was just like straight out of a nature documentary.
See, I was expecting, like, Steve Irwin to pop up and be like, oh, the cat gator is getting attacked by the giant sky.
Steve Irwin as a kid. I was genuinely, Steve Irwin was, like, the first celebrity death where I was, like, sad he died, because I used to watch Crocodile Hunter so, like, religiously after school when I was, like, grade one and grade two. So rest in peace to Steve Irwin. All my homies hate that stingray for what he did.
Yeah, no, that is true. I really, I was also a pretty big fan of that as well. But yeah, so next thing that we see is we cut back to Katara first, who's walking around, you know, trying to find Aang and Sokka. And we see, like, another person in the distance. At first, it's not really clear who it is, but we start to see the blue and recognize it's, like, another Water Tribe member. Katara then starts to cry a little bit, and, like, she's, like, trying to figure out who it is, and then recognizes that it looks like her mom, and she just has, like, tears running down her face. She's so excited to get to her, and right as she gets there and the light hits the hits where the person was, we realize that it was just a branch, and Katara I guess
gasps and then like starts sobbing
and then breaks down in tears. This is like a really sad moment, just because like
this was heartbreaking, honestly. Yeah, but continue.
You can tell how excited Katara is to have this reunion, and like even though they're in a swamp and she must know in the back of her mind it's not real, you definitely can feel for Katara here. What do you think, Zach?
Yeah, because this is her deceased parent who she loves with all her heart. And like you just stated, that's a very good way to put it. She knows that deep down in her heart, she knows that this is not real, but she's clinging on to the hope like, oh, maybe that is my mother. Maybe this is like some version of her. And then when she sees that it's not and it's just a branch, she just collapses and starts crying. And
yeah,
like I said, it was just truly heartbreaking. Honestly, this by far was the saddest scene of this episode for me. It really brings it to like a serious place, and it should. Like, this was a good episode because it blends like the serious and the comedic, and I think here we really get some like good like a very classic moment of just Katara sobbing at the image of her mother.
The next person we see is Sokka, and Sokka's trying to get through, but he keeps getting stuck in the vines. He keeps like getting upset at the vines as if the vines are like doing anything to him on purpose, but he's just cutting through them. He ends up falling, and as he lifts up his head, he sees Yue as the moon spirit. So she's like already in the beam of light rather than the actual person. And he's like trying to go to Yue. He's like trying to understand what's happening. He is actually able to understand like, oh no, this is just a swamp gas. And like in the moment,
yeah, he doesn't believe his own. He's like distrusting what he's seeing. He's like, he does think Sokka's the one who by far thinks it's an actual hallucination. Like he's kind of skeptical.
Well, then the swamp punishes him for being skeptical because Princess Yue says, you didn't protect me, which like that's rude. I think Sokka did everything he could. Like, I don't know what he could have done better. He protects her from any Fire Nation threat. She gives up herself on purpose. So I don't know what he could have done differently.
No, I agree. Maybe Jackson Rathbone in the live action movie didn't protect the moon spirit that well, but no, Sokka did everything to protect her. And I was kind of surprised because later on in the episode, they talk about like how it's that you see stuff from your past in these images from the swamp, but it's like, I wonder why this spirit or like this image of Yue says Sokka didn't protect her, because that's absolutely not true. It also like she kind of startles him because she disappears and then pops up right behind him, so he thinks he's like, oh, in the clear, it was just a hallucination, and then she pops up and like gives him a little jump scare. But yeah, I don't know, I felt kind of bad for Sokka here. Like Katara too, I felt like it was heartbreaking, but Sokka, it's like, wow, the spirit comes up and is just shaming him when he did do everything in his power to save her.
Yeah, I feel like usually spirits don't try to stun on you, especially when it's wrong. True. Like usually like if a spirit's like trying to visit you again, like especially one that loved you, it'd be like a nice moment, not like a little bit rude. But then we switch to Aang. Aang's like running around trying to find Katara and Appa and Sokka and all that, and then we see off in the distance a little girl in a fully white dress and a flying pig. The flying pig, you know, I feel like lots of things say like, oh, I'll do this when pigs fly. But I've never heard an expression about a girl in all white.
Yeah, me neither. And we see Toph, who we know to be Toph, in her like rich bourgeoisie garb, basically, not her like usual normal earthbender fit. And then, yeah, Aang starts to chase after her, and he's like swinging from vine to vine a la Tarzan. And she's just like giggling and running off into the distance, and she'll eventually disappear.
Yeah, I feel like anyone who can just dust Aang, especially because, like, you know, Aang's an airbender. He's able to, like, zip around as he wants.
Yeah, like, I'll never forget that scene. I forget, was it the storm where he just, like, zips through, like, the Roadrunner? Like, there was, like, that windy path with, like, the two people at the port, and then he just, like, zips right past them. So you're right. Like, anybody who can outrun Aang is, like, extremely fast. So I feel like that to Aang, that must, if somebody can outrun him, he must be able to think, like, oh, maybe that's a spirit. Like, he must be able to realize that no human can actually outrun him.
See, that's what I was about to say, is like, if someone's outrunning Aang, like either they're fake or they're some sort of spirit, because like if you're not an airbender, there's no way you're dusting him. He's just too quick, so he should
or they're just an extremely powerful bender in their own right. I guess is the only logical conclusion you could come to. And then we cut back to Du and Cho, and they have found Appa and Momo, and then I mix them up. So Cho is the smaller one, right? Fat guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, so then Cho says, oh, that's a Limu. A Limu tastes like possum chicken. And then Dew was like, a Limu tastes like possum chicken. So Dew and Cho, you can get the vibe that while they're swamp people, I don't know, maybe in Louisiana, there's some smart people who live in the swamp, like some intelligent Cajuns. But you get the vibe that these guys are not two of the brightest bulbs in the box. They're two of the dimmest bulbs, I'd say.
Yeah, they're definitely playing to the stereotype of them being dumb here. I do think, you know, understanding that it's called a Limu, like, while he's wrong, it's pretty close.
True. He says he saw one of these at, like, a fair before. He's, like, kind of close. Yeah. One letter off. I wasn't going to criticize it for his pronunciation of Limu.
Yeah.
But overall, I just said they came across as pretty stupid. And you're right. They kind of, part of me is like, maybe they lean too far to the stereotype with these guys. Like, they could have made them a little bit more nuanced. But then they do kind of correct that with Hugh later on in the episode. So it's not really a big deal.
Yeah. No,
so then that's true. Dew and Cho, they're basically like, oh, we just fixin' to eat ya, is what Dew says. And then Appa and Momo start to run away after that. And Cho's like, well, why'd you tell them we were going to eat them? And he's like, I didn't know they were going to understand. Which, admittedly, I did think this was like a funny line of dialogue.
Yeah, no, that, like, it is a funny joke because, you know, Appa, as we know, like, probably understands like a bit of language. But it is like funny. Like, there's no way they could have known this. And
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I feel like Dew and Cho, like, their little spat here was actually quite comical.
Yeah, but then we see something really cool. So we see I believe it's Dew stand up at the front of the like canoe slash kayaking that they're out, and he starts like spinning his arms and the water is bending behind him, similar to is as if it was like a speedboat. So essentially they've like created a speedboat with just the water bending behind him, and each boat has two people on it, one that looks like they're guiding and the other one that's like powering. And this is pretty cool. You know, no need for technology when you have these bending people here.
True. And are these swamp, I was just calling them dumb, but this is a very innovative technique to use their water bending for. And are these swamp benders, they're the first water benders we see outside of either of the two water tribes, correct?
Yeah, I believe
they might be the only ones too, I feel like, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't fact check me on that because I could be wrong. or don't call me on that because I'm almost certainly wrong.
But. Yeah, these are definitely like the most unique waterbenders we see. And it's pretty cool to see this waterbending used in like a totally different way.
No, I agree completely. So then we cut back to Aang, Katara, and Sokka, and they all bump into each other after getting separated, and they explain what they all saw to one another, and Aang's doesn't add up because Aang saw somebody they had not met prior. Katara saw their mother, Sokka saw Yue, Aang just saw this random little girl that none of them have met, so that's the one that doesn't add up.
Yeah, well, and before that, we see Aang just body Katara because he's like trying to catch up to the spirit. He
slams into her, yeah.
He's trying to catch up to the spirit, and he just like destroys her, like total knockout.
Yeah, and she's fine. How does Katara get up from this? Because you're absolutely right. I skipped over this stupidly because Aang is chasing this little girl spirit, and he like crashes into Katara like a football, like Lawrence Taylor running somebody down. Like he hits her hard,
yeah.
And she just gets up, does herself off, and she's fine. Like Katara's built different. She's tough because I would have been down for the count getting speared like that.
Exactly. See, we thought that Aang would be best on a basketball court, but I actually think put him on the football field, make him a linebacker, and you have a pretty good.
Like Aang would be like good getting sacks like Troy Polamalu. He just like jump over the offensive line before anything happens and just get the quarterback
block
down.
Now
you're right.
Kick.
No, 100%. Yeah. Let's be real. Aang could literally play any sport he wanted and excel. So that's how talented
true.
He is.
Yeah. Here we have like Sokka say, oh no, we're just thinking of people. We just see people that we think of all the time. And this was actually like a sad line from Sokka because then like I think we realize that Sokka actually like really does feel that he misses Yue and like we kind of get that connection again. I thought that was sweet.
Yeah, it was sad. And Sokka's like trying to rationalize what happened to him at the same time. He's like unsure if it actually was Yue or not. And it was sweet from Sokka. You can tell because when you see Sokka interact with Yue and Suki, you can tell he like truly cares about them as people. So
yeah,
it is nice to see the softer side of Sokka here.
But not to be too soft, he's immediately joking that there's must be a tea party because Aang says that the girl was in a fancy dress. And Sokka seems salty that he didn't get invited to the tea party.
True. true. And Sokka is also like, he just saw Yue, yet he's like skeptical that Aang has like seen this little girl. So yeah. I don't know. Like Sokka is sometimes like, Sokka on the one hand is like super intelligent sometimes, and the other time Sokka is just the biggest like ignoramus out of the cast. So what can you do?
No, that's
so
true.
Then Aang also states, he says this like gargantuan tree probably called all of them to the middle of the swamp for a reason. Like Aang states like, oh, this is central to the whole swamp, this tree, like it called us here. So Aang believes they were brought here by like a higher purpose almost. And then they immediately get attacked by this huge swamp creature that basically, like I said, looks almost like a green no face from Spirited Away is the vibe I got from it.
Yeah, definitely has some like Miyazaki Studio Ghibli type vibes here. This giant monster has like this weird wooden carved face, and then the rest of its body is just made up of vines. And it seems like, it seems like this vine monster is like pretty magical. It also comes right after Sokka's like, there's nothing magical here. And then of course we get, the vine right afterwards.
And then it like shoots it to the commercial break. So Sokka with like the little red herring right away there.
Yeah. Sokka can't say a single like definitive statement without immediately being proven wrong. That's pretty funny.
And the show loves to prove him wrong. I feel like they do that time and time again.
So then we get this thing, that's like a man, or a mask as a face, like a giant swamp creature. And this kind of also looks like Man Thing from the Marvel comics. Do you know what I'm talking about, Zach?
No, but I'll give it a quick Google because I'm kind of curious now. Man Thing. I've never heard of this.
So Man Thing is like this, just giant monster. I believe it's like an underwater monster.
Oh, I thought the Swamp Thing was also, is that a comic as well? Because that's what it kind of looks like. Was there a Swamp Thing by like the guy who wrote Watchmen? I feel like there was another comic that looked very similar to this.
No,
you're right. Man Thing is a good comparison because that is kind of, Man Thing's kind of just a more horrifying version of the swamp creature we get in Avatar.
Yeah, I feel like this is like the PG-13 version where like Man Thing's actually, like this is actually like a horror episode rather than just like a little eerie. But one funny thing about Man Thing, so there are some comics that are like regular size, and then Marvel had a line of comics that were giant sized. And so there's one comic that Man Thing was starring in, and the title reads Giant Sized Man Thing, which I always thought was funny as an adolescent. I laughed so hard.
Some innuendo of a title there. No, yeah. I did not know any of that. I'm glad to have you as like the resident Marvel expert here because I can just like pick your brain about anything Marvel, like comic related and stuff like that. So that works out.
Hey, I'm just glad that being a nerd in as like a child is paying off, you know, watching Avatar over and over has paid off and let us do this. Now, reading the Marvel comics lets me make all these weird references. I'd say it's gone pretty well.
True. Well, we can get back to this fight between Team Avatar and the Swamp Creature, because like I was saying at the top of the show, there's some really innovative techniques that they use here. So first Katara like surfed, so the Swamp Thing like captures Sokka, and then Katara like surfs at the beast and hits it with like a pinpoint water blast. And even, I haven't seen Katara do something like this, where she's able to like aim the blast directly at a beast, like a small like pinpoint shot of water. And then later on she freezes her breath, and then when Sokka captured, she like freezes around him with like some ice cold breath and then shoots a blast of water at Sokka to free him from the confines of the beast. And I was like, damn, like these are all water bending techniques we have not seen before prior to this. So I was very impressed with what she was doing.
So I think we start out with Aang, you know, with some more slicing, you know, classic Aang loves the slices. But then we see, Katara here really shows some creativity. You know, Sokka ends up doing pretty much nothing in this fight after immediately getting captured.
True, but I mean, what can Sokka do though? It's like a battle of Bender versus Bender. He can't provide any support. But you're right, Sokka does nothing, and I feel kind of bad for him. He does nothing except get captured, essentially.
Over and over, like Sokka like gets captured, and then he gets his leg stuck again. Like this, he just cannot do anything.
True, we can't catch a break.
Katara here really is the MVP. As she's slicing things, we see like some sort of regenerative properties, and like the swamp monster just keeps making itself whole again. Katara's sending waves or slices, it's like keeps coming back, and it seems like an impossible thing to beat. And I really do think it's like a pretty cool fight here.
No, 100%, because we've seen Aang do numerous slices. We've seen him shoot like scythes of air at people. But Katara, I've never seen this technique where she's like she's creating these like slices of water, essentially, for lack of a better term, and she's firing them at this swamp bender, and they're like super thin slices of water, and she's just shooting them rapid fire. And I like, yeah, I guess she learned from like Aang's airbending slices. She just picked up this tool to have in her toolbox, because this is a really unique technique to have, and it works because she's able to slash away at it, and even with the regenerative properties, they're able to see there's a bender behind the vines. Yeah. Thanks to Katara's technique here.
Right before we get that, we get Appa being chased by all of the swamp folk. And then we see Momo start throwing supplies at them.
Yeah, Momo's like chucking t-shirts and stuff. And then Joe's like, how does a Limu have a shirt?
Momo thinks that they're in like some random NBA game throwing some shirts into the audience. just throwing everything on the back. And then right after that, Momo just gets like hit off or something. Some like branch hits him. And then Tho's able to capture him. And Appa's by himself there, but then we go back and as you said before, we see Katara just sending a ton of water slices faster than the guy can redo them. The guy's not able to, you know, really regenerate the plants around him fast enough, and they're able to see someone's in there. Then Katara sends a massive slice of water, cuts the mask off, takes the top off of the seaweed monster. The entire thing falls apart, and it looks like they have some headway here.
They do. And then they see this old man behind the vines, and he explains that he's just protecting the swamp from people who want to hurt it, like Sokka.
Yeah, exactly. There is a bit of a weird thing, because Aang like sort of calls out and says like, why did you call us here if you wanted to kill us? And that's when the fight ends. This fight ends like pretty abruptly. Like it seems like it ends just because like Aang screams something out. And then, you know, the person who is inside the whole time is like, I didn't call you here, as if like that's like a perfect thing, a perfect reason to like stop a fight.
Well, I think he kind of, when he says that, when Aang says that, the guy Hugh behind the vines kind of realizes like, okay, maybe they're not enemies is what he's saying. So,
yeah, I mean, that's fair. But I think if I'm like Team Avatar, I'm still going to like freeze him or something.
True, because you are right that it ends abruptly. But I think they kind of realize like, oh, they're kind of, both sides kind of realize they're fighting for no reason. So they chose that point in time to stop the fight.
And Sokka here feels really vindicated. Sokka's like, see, there's no monster. Everything's normal. It's just someone defending his house. Like, totally good here. But Sokka's like, Sokka's way off. Immediately, he's disproven. Who's saying like, no, this is mystical. Like, I reached enlightenment under this tree. Another nice little shout out to the Buddha, who also reaches enlightenment under a tree, I believe. It's like the second time in like 4 or 5 episodes where there's been a nice reference there. He describes, he says that the whole swamp is just one giant tree. The branches are, you know, across the entire swamp, just one big living organism.
This old man gives quite an inspirational speech here. Honestly, I actually enjoyed a lot of the stuff he was saying. I thought this was very deep for a children's show, again, reminiscent of the speech between the Mechanist and Aang, because they're basically picking his brain. And at one point, we don't have to go through the whole speech, but at one point he says, time is an illusion and so is death. Because Aang was thinking, he's like, oh, well, like he thinks he knows how to find this person, but he's not sure how. And then once Hugh says that, he's like, time is an illusion, so it's someone I'll meet in the future. So with this statement, Aang is able to figure out, like, Aang is able to put meaning to the vision he saw in the forest, which was really cool.
Yeah, I think that this guy is, like, underrated in terms of his enlightenment. Like, he really does have a lot of pretty interesting things that he's saying here. Like, my favorite statement that he says is, we're all living together, even if most folks don't act like it. We all have the same roots, and we're all branches of the same tree. And you know what? Like, this is a bit of a contrived metaphor with the whole tree thing, but that's right. I wish more people acted like it.
I agree. Sorry to interrupt. You're 100% correct. Because, well, when you see this swamp bending man, say he's reached enlightenment under the tree. Initially, when I first saw that, I took that with a grain of salt. But then afterwards, once I hear him give this impassioned speech, I'm like, wow, I can see how this man reached enlightenment underneath this tree, a la the Buddha. Because, I thought this guy was a little underrated of a character, honestly. Especially compared to, like, Du and Cho, this guy seemed a lot more intelligent and with it than those two.
Yeah. I agree. Like, he seems pretty coherent. He actually seems like he probably came from somewhere else and, like, ended up here rather than, like, being one of the Swamp People to start, because he seems like very enlightened. Like, it seems like,
you know what I'm kind of surprised by? I'm kind of surprised Hugh is not a member of the White Lotus, actually. I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I'm surprised that they didn't shoehorn him into that as well, because that's think he would have been he's more enlightened here than Paku was in in the later half of season one.
Yeah, that's very true. In terms of just like in terms of how woke he is, like, Hugh's putting Paku to shame.
Yeah, no, exactly. But I mean, what can you do? And then we cut back to Hugh's lesser intelligent tribes folk, because they had this little ditty while they're trying to capture Appa and Momo, which I actually liked. I like their little song here. It's like, sat my lines by the riverbed, caught two fish and I killed them dead. Cut them, and I toss the heads in the water to keep them cat gators fed. Like, I'll be honest, I like the little internal rhyme there. I didn't mind it. It's like, now maybe it's not as good as a tunnel song, but it was all right.
Yeah, this song is good. You know, I would definitely put this song above the Girls from Ba Sing Se song. So this is at least the best song in the episode. I'd feel that's not like a huge statement. I still think that that there are better songs in the Avatar universe. But
no, definitely.
This one's at least fun. And so Aang is able to track down where Appa is. He uses the energy from the tree. He's able to take it, and he essentially tracks down where Appa is by looking at all the different branches. It's a pretty cool use of the sort of like bending spiritual power that Aang has. And he goes and stops him. He interrupts the song that these two people are singing. Maybe there's a second verse, Zach, that would have made it even better. But they start attacking each other. Aang is sending us some air. Then the swamp bender starts sending some water towards them, and Katara pushes it back. And Katara realizes, like, oh, hey, you guys are water benders. And then as soon as he does, they're like, oh, let's stop fighting. Another really abrupt end to the fight.
It's pretty funny because the Cho, I think he's, or Do, is like, that means we are kin. And Katara just looks disgusted by the fact that she may be related to this, like, swamp bending man.
Yeah. I feel like Sokka would actually be pretty excited to be related to these people. I feel like Sokka could get along with him.
I mean, kind of, we cut and they're like all eating around this fire, having a meal, all buddy buddy. And then Sokka is explaining, it's like, why'd you guys want to eat Appa if you have all these like cat gators around? And then Dude's like, you want me to eat old Slim? He's like a member of the family. Which I thought was a pretty funny joke there, admittedly, that they don't eat the cat gators because they're just like domesticated.
Yeah. I mean, you know, no one would think to eat the, eat a dog. So maybe the cat.
No, true. No, yeah, no, I could see that. I was like, you know what? I actually respect Do and Cho for not eating their pet cat gator here. So
yeah, I agree. One thing that I don't think is a good joke is that, so Do's like, how do you like the possum chicken? And Sokka's like, tastes like Arctic hen. And this is just like a continuation of the joke, like everything tastes like chicken. I don't know. Yeah. Like, that joke's not that funny to me. Like, maybe I'm missing something here. But that was a real swing and miss.
I also don't think a lot of stuff tastes like chicken, or not as much as people say it does. I think that's just a dumb thing to state in general. I feel like very few things, like, because you hear that about like some random like exotic meats. It's like, oh, it kind of tastes like chicken. I don't know. I think that's a catch-all way to describe something that is never necessarily true, which I don't like. Because I think a lot of meats have very unique flavors.
Yeah,
like, very few things actually taste like chicken.
Yeah, this is like kind of like a joke that my friend group has, is that anytime someone says a new board game, we're always like, oh, is it kind of like Risk? And the joke is like, every game is kind of like Risk in a way. And so like, even word games like Bananagrams or like Scrabble that has nothing to do with Risk, as soon as someone starts explaining it, they're like, oh yeah, the rules. So it's kind of like Risk. So it's the same
that's
way.
That's a pretty funny running joke to have.
Yeah, same way, like everything tastes like chicken. All board games are kind of like Risk.
They say possum chicken, though, and do we ever see any possum chickens in Avatar? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. I mean, we see, one that Sokka's eating, but I don't think we actually see it in the flesh.
Yeah, and then Sokka's, like, at one point, he's talking to Katara, and he's like, well, I'm just eating a giant bug, and Sokka has this huge, like, this is kind of like a throwaway joke, but I do want to stop down and talk about it, because Sokka, like, pulls up this huge bug, and then just takes, like, a bite out of the bug's ass, essentially, and that's just disgusting. And, like, the bug, what's crazy about it is, like, it doesn't even look cooked. It looks like Sokka's just, like, eating the bug raw. It reminded me of, like, the bugs that they're eating in, like, Lion King, except a little less slimy.
Yeah, my guess is that this is supposed supposed to be like the crawfish, that like the equivalent of crawfish in the universe? Because like, just like Cajun people in the South will like steam crawfish. So they like, they kind of look like they're just their regular things. And then people like, you know, do gross things like, eat their body and like, I don't know, nothing worth talking about on the podcast, but you know, people will eat those as well.
That's fair.
Just like they're eating the bug. One thing, another joke that I thought was funny is, they're talking about the South Pole with the swamp benders. And they're like, oh, the swamp pole, is there a good swamp? Or sorry, the, not the swamp pole, the South Pole. Is there a good swamp down there? And Katara's like, no, it's ice and snow. And they're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. That's why you left. That makes sense.
Yeah, they're like, what? There's no swamp there? Of course you left. Yeah. Which is pretty funny because like, well, I don't know how, I guess you guys have never seen a map before. They've just been so confined to their swamp. They haven't seen the whole world.
Yeah, maybe that's why Hu didn't get the invitation to the White Lotus, is that they tried to send him an invitation, but there's no like postal zip code there and it got lost in the mail.
Yeah, no, because, and you know what's weird about Hugh? We didn't talk about this. He's a weirdly anglicized name compared to everybody else in the show. You know what I mean? Like, he's the only person who just has, like, a normal run-of-the-mill, like, Hugh. Everyone else, like, Zuko, Aang, they're all, like, Asiatic in some way or form, or, like, whereas he's the only one with just a normal, like, Caucasian. I guess him and Tom Tom are the two that I could think of off the top of my head. But Tom Tom's just a horrible name in general, which we eviscerate.
See, actually, Zach, we got messages from all 1,600 Tom Toms that are in the U.S. To not slander.
Were they
anymore.
Just putting me on blast? Yeah. Were they just like, effing Zach, he doesn't respect the Tom Toms?
They actually tweeted me, slid into my DMs. They said, we won't stand for this Tom Tom slander. So now we're going to get the Hughes writing in. My dad's middle name is Hughes, so he might have to join the class action lawsuit against you.
Great. You know, I do like people named Hugh. Like, Hugh is Jimmy Neutron's dad. I think he's one of the funnier cartoon characters. So I do like most Hughes I meet. But yeah, it's a weird name relative to all the other people's names in Avatar that we see.
Yeah, it could actually just be that, like, this is, because I don't actually think it's spelled like Hugh is, like H-U-G-H. I think when I looked it up, it was spelled a bit differently.
It could be like H-U-E. In my Netflix subtitles, it was spelled H-U-G-H, but Netflix subtitles are notoriously wrong. Yeah. So, no, that's a very good point that I didn't even think of. It could be like H-U-E or something like that.
Exactly, yeah. So maybe it's, like, not as Caucasian as we think it is.
So, no, you're definitely right. So we cut back to this final scene of the episode. We actually cut back to Zuko as the blue spirit, and he is mugging the man who made Iroh dance for change. So Zuko held on to this grudge the whole day and decided to get his revenge in the dark of the night.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a fight ending abruptly. This guy's like, who's there? And then the next thing you know, he's like taken down. His swords are now in Zuko's hands, and he's just on the ground, helpless. That's a fight that really got cut short.
No, it did, but I kind of feel like this guy deserved it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you're making a homeless person dance for change, which I didn't talk about at the top of the episode, but the fact that he was doing that, like, what a scummy person. Like, I was actually happy Zuko mugged him. Like, I didn't think Zuko should have taken... No, for real. Like, Zuko shouldn't have taken the ostrich horse. That was, like, reprehensible, and, like, shame on Zuko for that. But Zuko mugging this man, yeah, this guy deserved to be mugged. He's scum.
So then, Zach, we said, you know, it's okay to steal from pirates. I guess the next question is it okay to rob a mean person?
Yeah, it is. If a person's like true, if a person, well, if, it depends, like there's varying stages of mean, but if this person is the type of dude who's gonna make homeless people dance for money, like, I don't know, I feel like you are so mean at that point that I don't feel bad that somebody would mug.
All right. You know, I think we're gonna have to agree to disagree here.
No, that's fair. We could put another Twitter poll to this too. So, I mean, we could, I mean, I may be wrong because this is just my opinion. Honestly, like, we can agree to disagree, but I do believe that this guy was just like scummy enough where I didn't feel bad. Why? Yeah. When you saw this final scene where you're like, oh, my heart aches for this man who made Iroh dance at the top of the episode. I know you were like that. I'm just
I wasn't that much on his side, but I was just kind of thinking, like, you know, why steal from this guy? You know, obviously stealing the ostrich horse is like a terrible decision.
No, you're right. It probably is wrong to steal from this man. I'm an a-hole myself, just like the podcast you were just on, and I believe it's okay to steal from this man.
All right. Well, there you go. That is that is our episode, you know, summarized nicely with Zach's confession that he's an a-hole.
Yeah, the people, the listeners every week just get more insight into my psyche as a person. I bet everybody listening just thinks like less and less of me as the episodes go.
Okay, well, I admitted on this podcast that I used to torture my sister with a dog whistle. So I think...
True.
I think at least you're in good company, Zach.
True. Yeah, but overall, I like this episode, especially like I kind of forgot. I remember the swamp fight. Like I remember enjoying that fight when I first watched it and I enjoyed it on this rewatch. But I kind of forgot about Hugh's whole inspirational speech at the end, which really tied up the episode overall as a whole and just did a great job putting a bow on the whole thing. And that was just kind of a pleasant surprise on this rewatch.
Yeah, it's a nice sentiment. You know, we get the connection from last episode with Boomy saying, listen to the earth. We get the introduction of Toph, although it's obviously not like
very
Toph
brief,
as we come to know it, and it is extremely brief. But I think this is a good episode. You know, we I'm actually really surprised with the advice that we got from Hugh, and I think the more I think about it, the more I like the episode.
No, same. Yeah, and this is an episode that I kind of went in, I was like, it's the swamp. I was like, kind of went in with low expectations almost, but no, I very much enjoyed this episode overall. The fight was great. It entertained me a lot more than the chase from last week. I really enjoyed the innovative techniques that both Aang and Katara were using, but especially Katara. Poor Sokka does not have a good showing this fight, but that's the nature of being the only non-bender in the group, so sometimes that happens in Sokka. We're just used to it at this point. But overall, yeah, great episode. Yeah. Is this where we should rate it right now?
Yeah, let's go ahead and jump into the ratings. As always, you can give your rating of the episode via either tweeting at us or sending it via email, avatar@poshorecaps.com. We rank every episode between 0 and 4 cabbages. Let's start off with the listeners this week, Zach, because I think that they're a little bit more down on the episode than we're going to be. The listeners gave this a 2.82.
Why? And I'm surprised because I saw Lydia and a couple others were down on it. And that kind of shocked me. Like 2.8 is pretty low, I feel like. Like for reference, I gave Bato a 2.4, which in hindsight, I should have given a 0. But I gave it a 2.4. And that was an episode that I did not like. So like 2.8 for listeners is very low. Like, because for me, I have this at a 3.5. But even like a 3.1 or a 3.2 would be like respectable for me. Like, 2.8, that's kind of too low. I don't know if I agree with the listeners on that. Did, that's just way too
low. We did have some people that were pretty high on it. You know, we had Daniel with a 3.75. And I think...
Oh, yeah. So it just averaged out to 2.8.
Yeah. So like, we actually did have, like, a lot of variation this week on this score. So I think it's interesting, actually, that, you know, this episode, like, seems to be a bit hit or miss. You know, we had some people in the Facebook thread saying... that this episode's overrated. Some people saying it's never highly rated.
True. Everyone's got their like own succinct opinion on this episode. So it's very interesting how different people get different things from this episode. But yeah, my overall rating is a 3.5 out of 4 for this episode. What about yourself, Jacob?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to split the difference between the listeners and you, Zach. I'm at a 3.1. It's like a B plus episode, or I guess actually that'd be like a C plus. It's pretty good. You know, I think it does the job. It has interesting characters. We get the swamp people. That's fun. We get an introduction to Toph. That's cool. But it doesn't do anything really special for me. And I feel like it's just another one of the like generic, good, but not fantastic Avatar episodes.
That's fair.
Well, that
I kind of am a little too high on some episodes, honestly. But you know what? 3.5, I'll stick with
it. Hey, at least you like the show. That'd be bad if we were
podcasting. True. I mean, that's why I podcast about it. Because I like
exactly.
But you're right. No, it's good to be passionate about the show.
That leaves the this week's episode at the number of pi, actually. 3.14. So
would you look at that?
Yeah. Zach, one random thought that comes to mind is I actually memorized a ton of digits of pi because in like the fifth grade or something, we had a competition that whoever named
did
the
you
most,
win?
I did win, whoever named the most.
Oh, nice flex.
our math teacher would give them some pi. So I sat there and I memorized like 40 digits or something and no one else really tried.
At least you're honest. No one else really tried. That's pretty funny. I don't. Were you going to ask me how many digits of pi I know? Because the answer is like none.
At one point,
maybe I knew 10, but honestly, I was never the biggest math person. Like people see my glasses and flatter me. They assume I'm a lot smarter than I am, but math was never my strong suit. And I never, even though I could memorize stuff, but I think at one point I had like the first 10 digits memorized. Now I don't know a single one. What was it like 3.142? I know there's a 2 there.
3.1415. 5 is the next
two. There we go. So I was completely wrong. Not even close.
There's also
there you go.
There's also a song that's the first 100 digits of pi sung to some it's some piece of classical music. I don't want to say it incorrectly in case I get dragged for getting it wrong. But that is the first 100 digits of pi, and I think I think I could memorize that again and memorize them all.
No, you. If I sat down, could I memorize the digits of pi? Sure. Honestly, I think I could, but why? Like, that's what I always thought to myself. Like, at least you got pi as a reward, so you had, like, a reason to memorize it. But when we were kids and there were the people, like, in my school flexing, like, oh, well, I know all the digits of pi. It's like, who cares? This is mostly useless information. No, exactly. But this guy, or like this guy's like, I know 40 digits of pi, because there was this nerdy kid in my class bragged about it. And then also on the show Kid Nation, I think some other kid was bragging about, because I was listening to that podcast about Kid Nation, and some kid was bragging about knowing all the digits of pi. It's like, okay, you're cool. You know all the digits of pi. Like, what a loser. If you're bragging about knowing, which you were not doing, but and I'm just saying children who did in the past, like, those are the biggest losers. Like, maybe they grew up to be rich, successful people, but they're still losers at heart.
Okay, well, thank goodness I wasn't bragging about it. I was I would get raked over the coals. A brutal assessment here.
Yeah, I don't know. Every time we go deeper into these podcasts, I just have like hotter takes. Like,
I know. Zach, I think maybe 1 week what we should do is we should like pretend to talk about the podcast and then start it off like an hour in. So that like you start just flaming hot with these takes.
I feel like people are, I feel like honestly, sometimes I say something, I'm like, wow, I don't know if a lot of people agree with that, but nobody usually, there's not a lot of pushback to the outlandish stuff I say.
Okay. So who knows? New challenge. I would like for you to say something so ridiculous that it doesn't, like, I don't catch it as ridiculous, but someone writes and is like, that's
you
wrong.
Check you, because me and you, if like, when you say something ridiculous and I say something ridiculous, we'll check each other. We'll be like, hold on a sec. I don't know if I agree with that. But the listeners never really check us like the way we check each other.
See, but I want for you to convince me of something so ridiculous that someone has to write in and be like, please don't believe that is just incorrect. You're wrong. Like, please,
I'll try. I don't know if I'm that intelligent or Machiavellian to do something like that, but I'll try. Why not?
One little task we could have. There you go.
So should we move on to our battle of the battle ranking right now?
Let's do it. Our battle of the battle rankings.
We've got a little far off topic, but hey, we're actually honestly good time. We're moving a little faster than we normally do, so we have enough time to go off topic for a little bit. Why not?
Yeah, you know, the true people in Team Avatar Podcasting, I'm sure they won't mind if we're a little off topic. So
I asked a couple of listeners about that once upon a time, and they said they didn't necessarily mind, so that worked out.
There you go. Well, now we're going to get back on topic with the Battle of the Battle rankings, just like the episode rankings, but for the battles. I only really want to rank the one battle.
I agree. There is no really other battle to rank besides the Team Avatar versus the Swamp Monster. No point ranking Appa and Momo versus the Swamp Monster. There's not really any other fights to rank. So,
all right.
So what do you have for this? What's your ranking here, Jacob?
So my ranking for this battle is a 3.3. And I think that, this is a battle that I know quite well. This is one that, like, I think about sometimes when I'm thinking about, like, cool fights. And I think that the use of Katara's, like, creative waterbending, the breathing and making something turn to ice, the slashes of water are both really cool. But the fact that it ends so abruptly takes it down just a notch for me. I think that the episode could have been a little bit better if it had like a better, a more satisfying conclusion to the fight. And that would have made me like the fight even more.
Interesting, because I didn't necessarily mind the ending of the fight much, because as we come to know Hugh, we learn he's kind of a pacifist, just like Aang, and he's protecting the forest. So I could kind of see why he's like, okay, let's stop the fight now. He kind of realized they were not threats to the forest and just stop being combative. So I didn't necessarily mind that. And because, like you said, this was a memorable fight, even prior to, I watched Avatar like many years ago, and like I've rewatched it a bunch, but this is a fight that I still remember compared to a lot of fights that we have watched in this rewatch. I'm like, I barely even remembered that. So for that reason, and the innovative water bending from Katara, I have this at a 3.6 actually.
Okay.
Even higher than my ranking of the episode. The reason being is like any fight that like sticks with me after all these years, I have ranked very highly. And 3.6, yeah, I'm that's the score I have for it out of 4.
You know,
I enjoyed this fight a lot.
I think that makes sense. That puts the fight at a 3.45, and I think that's like about where I think I'm comfortable at being. I have it a little bit lower, but you know, not by a ton.
No, that's fine. That 3.3 is a fair rating for the fight as well. So no,
I think Daniel also wrote in. He said that he thought very similar to me, that like his only complaint about this episode is that the fight between the trio and the vine monster ends in a rather inexplicably abrupt fashion. So I do think that, like, this is something that, you know, I'm not at least a crazy person here, but I agree. Like, the fight is cool enough to stand up on its own.
Yeah, there we go. So that's our fight ranking. And if you also want to rank us on Apple Music, you can do that at postshowrecaps.com/ATLA. We love those 5-star reviews, and yeah, they help us a lot. So send those in.
Yeah, that's a good plug. Slam those 5 stars. Or you know what? You can slam whatever star you think we deserve, but I just think we deserve 5. How about you, Zach?
True. Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I'm completely very arrogant to that regard. I don't deserve 5 stars in anything in life, but for this podcast with my good friend Jacob, this definitely deserves 5 stars.
I'll take it, Zach. Now we're going to jump into our listener feedback, a bit of a full listener feedback, so I'm excited to get into this. We have lots of people writing in. We always appreciate that. Just as a reminder, you can always write into avatar@postshowrecaps.com or tweet at us @postshowrecaps, and we'll get your feedback. Yeah, we have lots of places to start, so let's just jump right in.
Do you want to start with Daniel, since we just referenced what he was talking about?
Yeah, let's do it.
So Daniel Strunk, he's written in a bunch. He says, sorry for his absence. He loved the episode. Is it the most unique episode we have experienced yet? He says it mixes elements of horror, environmental spiritualism in a cool way, and it reminded him of Miyazaki and then also the Swamp of Dagobah. And Jacob, do you know about the Swamp of Dagobah? What is that actually?
Oh, it's the place that Yoda is in Star Wars.
Oh, that's what it is. Yeah, I'm like the worst Star Wars lore person ever. That makes so much sense, because it actually does seem very similar to Dagobah. He says his only complaint was the fight ending in inexplicably abrupt fashion. And he also says he has an economics background, so whenever Jacob gets into economics on the podcast, he totally supports that, however tangential. Hey. So shout out Daniel, a consistent feedback writer. Yeah. And thank you, Daniel, for that.
A fellow economics background. I love it. That's also my background as well. So glad to see you there. I'm actually surprised, Zach, that you didn't know that Dagobah was a Star Wars thing. Like, I feel I forgot
the term. Like, now that you mention it, it's like, oh, it's from Star Wars. I was like, where is this Dagobah thing from? You know, it's funny. I just watched like some of the Star Wars like 2 weeks ago. I should have known that, but I don't know much about Star Wars. I'm like the biggest Star Wars casual out there. Gotcha, so forgive me.
Yeah, that's one of the ones that always got punned. It's like the Star Wars Valentine's Day cards are always like, oh, not a Dagobah where I don't think of you.
Oh, yeah. I could see exactly how they would do that.
Anyway, to answer Daniel's question, I do think this is one of the most unique episodes we've seen. I think that this and the episode where Aang is in the spirit world are like up there in terms of uniqueness. I think that this is like pretty cool because it does stay like in the, I guess, real world, as real as Avatar can be. But it does have like all of these weird things happening. And I think that it's like kind of cool that we get, you know, the introduction of Toph in this unique way. I think I really appreciate the fact that Hugh has this like really deep statement that he has. And I think that, yeah, I'm a big fan of like the uniqueness aspect of this episode. What about you, Zach?
Yeah, I agree with what Daniel was saying. And I too like the environmental spiritualism as well. And I like them teaching you all about that. So yeah, I enjoyed everything that this episode incorporated.
Yeah. Also,
and yeah, I agree with Daniel's score is the closest to mine out of all the feedbackers. Yeah. So I co-sign everything he says pretty much.
Also, it is true that trees can like communicate with each other through their roots. So like, while all trees are not necessarily like one tree, like trees can often communicate about like where food and stuff is. I listened to some podcast about that and it like blew my mind. So. Anyway.
Yeah, a lot of, and it's not even just trees. Apparently, I was watching this thing on elephants, and elephants can communicate silently, but across like cities, and then reconvene.
Chester's favorite
animal.
Empty
town, and like the elephants all took separate routes, but then the matriarchal elephant was like able to communicate to all the elephants everywhere through like vibrations that humans can't hear. And I was like, damn, I didn't know elephants could just like talk to each other across like miles. That's pretty insane.
Yeah, that's that's the more you crazy. Know. Wow. Yeah.
So should we jump into Navi's feedback here?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, Navi writes in saying hi to both of us. Shout out Fifth Wheel Navi, by the way. We'll get her on the podcast eventually. Yeah. So how about we got to hit her up? Maybe we'll get her for one of these upcoming episodes. But Navi says hi. She says, I hope the new year's treating both of us well. And her question for us is, who are our MVPs for the episode and why are they the Swamp Tribe people? And also to date this email, which Avatar character would take part in the GameStop short stock fiasco? Would they be a hedge fund investor or a random Redditor? Thanks and take care, Navi.
Yeah, so I like the first question. I'll take that one first. I definitely think that the Swamp Tribe is not going to be the MVP. I'm going to go with Katara on this one. You know, she frees Sokka. She uses some creative waterbending. That's going to be my MVP for the episode. With the Swamp Tribe people maybe being like most improved. Like, I wouldn't expect them to be as good as they are, or like sneaky value. But definitely not like the MVP. What about you,
Zach? Yeah, I think Katara is the MVP, and second in that would be Hugh for me, honestly. Yeah. And but yeah, so that's the order I would have it in. But I like Navi's second question a lot, because which Avatar character would take part in the GameStop short stock fiasco? And Jacob, do you have an opinion on this? Because I have mine. I wonder if we're gonna have the same person, but let's see.
So I'm trying to think of a few people. I think you know, the Cabbage Man is definitely on the side of the hedge funds. The Cabbage Man's complaining that all of these people on Reddit are pumping up the stock and, you know, ruining the sacredness of short selling. In terms of
interesting, I don't know if I'd have the Cabbage Man. Like, for me, the person who I slotted, I have a friend, God bless his soul, I'll leave him nameless, but he's never really invested in stocks, and he's always like, oh, but we have to, this GameStop stuff, it's gonna shoot up to 5,000, it's gonna make so much money. And I feel like Sokka would be one of those persons. Sokka would be one of those people. He'd be a random Redditor just like following the trends and like dumping his money onto it. So that's where I could kind of see, like, Sokka would definitely be that person for me.
See, personally, I kind of thought that like King Bumi would be like Shamith, who like comes in a little bit later and is like hyping it up and like on the side of the Redditors. Just like,
I feel like King Bumi, yeah, he would do that. He would like buy in at like 300 or something, like buy in super late and like lose all his money, but like still be confident in his investment nonetheless.
Or like, so I think he wouldn't even care. Like, he'd throw away money and laughing.
Exactly, yeah,
the
that's
whole time.
My point. Yeah, exactly. Like, he would buy in late and then not care still, exactly, as he like loses millions. So that's pretty accurate. But yeah, there's a lot of honestly cool Avatar characters. I feel like Zuko's too risk adverse to invest in something like GME.
For sure.
Zuko and I just wouldn't care. I don't think he would care to invest. He doesn't really care for the material. Zuko also, I don't think, would be into it. I don't know. Is there any other character you think would just be either on the side of the hedge funds or the average Reddit investor?
Well, Azula's like the classic person who's like, oh, well, daddy's money will take care of it. Like, definitely, if she was in the 21st century, her dad runs like some nice hedge fund, and you know, she's saying like, oh, the poor hedge fund managers. So I'd say that that's where she is.
Oh, true. Yeah, Azula would be like completely eviscerating all these eat the rich folks.
Exactly,
online.
Exactly. Yeah, so there we go. That's our take on GME. You know, it's such a big story that we had to mention it this week.
True. I mean, because you work in economics, I don't know if you give your full opinion, but we talk a little bit about offline. Very interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Because I'm so, like, I don't know anything about stocks. And I was telling Jacob prior to the show that with GME, there were people who got in at like 100, or I knew people like that. And I felt like by that point, I was already way too late. So I'm already looking towards the next thing. Yeah. So sadly, I feel like I missed the boat on GME.
All I'll say is that it made the trading week very busy and quite fun. But yeah, we can leave it there and get into the rest of the feedback.
We can leave it there and get into the rest of the feedback. You know what's funny, though? I found Christopher, your friend, your IRL friend, Christopher's feedback from last week. And I didn't even notice. His only feedback was, excuse me, I have a comment. This episode is so good. 7 out of 7 stars. Even though we do a 4 out of 4 rating.
Look.
So shout out to Christopher, because I was just chuckling to myself reading his feedback from last week.
Chris knows that it's 4 out of 4. He knows.
No, I know he knows. Chris is a funny guy. He's like, he has a lot of tongue-in-cheek feedback. Yes, so
he's very much a troll, I would say. He sent me a video this morning of him when he was like 8. Just filming downtown Chicago with his family, and like he like produced it now and like edited it, and it was a slog to get through. Anyway, it was pretty fun.
No, Christopher's funny. I enjoy all his feedback, even when it's not serious at all.
Exactly.
And then who else said?
Yeah, so Audrey, you know, previous guest, wrote in and said, "Did Aang get the short end of the stick by not seeing any of the air nomads he was close to or lost?" And also, would you rather see someone from your past in the swamp, can be someone past or someone you just lost touch with, like Sokka or Katara, or see a future person like Aang?
I think Aang, yeah, maybe he did, but maybe it would have been a traumatic experience. Like, maybe it would have been like Princess Yue with Sokka, where like Monk Gyatso pops up and is like, you shouldn't have left, or like something horrible. Yeah. So maybe Aang dodged a bullet in that regard. But to answer Audrey's question, honestly, I would not want to see a lot of the people from my past. I feel like I distance myself or stop talking to them for a reason. So
yeah.
I feel like that is not, I'd rather see somebody like pleasant that I'm going to interact with from the future, like Aang did with Toph.
Yeah.
I'd rather see somebody from the future than the past, but that's just me. I don't know. Everybody's different. So.
No, I agree with you, Zach. I would much rather see a future person myself. I think that it would be a lot more hopeful. You know, if you see someone from the past, it's like, oh, thinking about what has already happened. But if you see someone in the future, it's like, oh, that person's going to be important for me. Like I'm excited to see what's going to happen. And yeah, I think that there's like a lot of hope in that. So I'd definitely go with the future person. In terms of getting the short end of the stick, I don't really know. I think Aang getting to see Toph and getting the like clarity of like, okay, this is someone who's going to be important is much more valuable than seeing like Monk Gyatso and then just like bump into a tree.
No, I agree with that completely. And yeah, I mean, that's, should we just jump into Lydia's feedback right now? And is that
we have a few more people. Let's say Lydia perfect. For last. So Dan wrote in and said, what do you think of the Swamp Bender hunting song? How does it compare to Secret Tunnel, Traveling Girl, Winter Spring, and whatever else I might be missing that's aired so far? So what I'd propose here, you know, we've had some songs. I feel like every time they come up, we talk about them. I think we should create a tier list of the songs and slot them in. Does that sound good with you?
Should we do that right now? I think, should we wait until we get, because we're close to Tales of Bossexay, right? Should we wait till then? Because there's going to be a lot of songs that's easy to buy. I guess we can start the tier list right now. So I assume you have the tunnel song in the S tier. I don't know if I'd slot any song in the S tier from Avatar first, or none of the songs. Okay, you know what? I'll concede. I'll concede just so we don't spend too much time on it. We'll have the tunnel song, the S tier. I enjoyed this hunting song. I don't know if it's A tier, but at the very least, it's B tier for me.
Okay, yeah, I can get behind that. So yeah, you know, an S tier for the Secret Tunnel song. I think that this the song here is B tier. I think it's like enjoyable. It's kind of funny.
And Dan is an ATLA super fan because I forget some of these. Oh, the Traveling Girl, is that also another song by like the hippies?
Yes, I believe so. It's like don't fall in love with the traveling girl. She'll leave you brokenhearted. That one.
Okay, put that in like D tier. Okay. And then what about Winter Spring? What song is that?
That's
again?
The one that Uncle Iroh is singing on the boat where he's like, Winter, Spring, Summer, and Fall. And
that song like kind of sucks, but that scene makes me laugh. So like, I kind of want to put that in like the C or B tier for that reason. Just like Iroh's like horrible singing overall just like makes me chuckle. So I want to bump it up a tier for that reason.
So I actually had that one in C tier as well, which is pretty funny. I thought that would be a hot take that song was like any good at all, but
no, I mean, it's a horrible song. Like we're not pretending like it's a good song, but just the comedic value of it overall makes it C tier rather than like F tier.
All right. And so, then one,
there we go. I think
one last one. What about the girls from Bossing Say? Where do we have that one, Zach?
D tier, if not F tier. I have agree it with you. We'll put it F tier. Iroh's got better songs coming up. So.
All right. Well, there you go. That's our tier list ranking. And that's another thing that we can update every time we get one. So that's
true. I mean, there we go. Yeah. We can make a little Google Doc and voila, we got ourselves a new little segment
here. Thanks for writing in, Dan. I'm a huge fan of the songs anyway. So getting to explicitly rank them on the pod's pretty fun.
Yeah, I sang a song horribly off tune this episode. Maybe next week, Jacob will sing one completely off tune as well.
Sure, I can work that in. Sarah wrote in and said, with the magical swamp connection thing, why is there a need for the lion turtle deus ex machina? I saw that you responded to this in the Facebook page, but I think it's a good question to bring up here as well.
It is a good question, and I've talked about this on the podcast before. I love Avatar The Last Airbender, one of my favorite shows of all time, but I think the finale is a little weak. And I've heard behind the scenes that they rushed it, there were some writing issues, some budget issues, and the Lion Turtle in particular just kind of seems so out of nowhere. And I get where Sarah's coming from, because why couldn't Aang use this like tracking power rather than using the Lion Turtle, right? Because the Lion Turtle does, I think they provide more build up to Aang doing what he does in this episode than what they end up doing with the Lion Turtle. And for those who don't know, a deus ex machina is a random story or plot or story event or plot device that just ends up saving a character like out of the blue. That's essentially what a deus ex machina is. So it's like a sign of the writing not being amazing. And I'm not a biggest fan of the Avatar finale for a couple of things. So We'll get into that when we get there, but I do agree with the gist of what Sarah's saying. What about you, Jacob?
Yeah, I do think that it would have been better to rely on something that's already been introduced into the universe.
Yes.
Because, like, the whole issue with, like, these sort of occurrences in movies is, like, whenever it comes out of nowhere and it's, like, essentially... like without this plot device, there's like an unsolvable problem. And it seems like they'd already introduced something into the universe, which could have brought back like a more plausible happy ending to get to the resolution they wanted. So I think I would have preferred for them to go back to the swamp ending instead, or sorry, the swamp with a tree, rather than like have this lion turtle. I think this is actually, like,
I agree. And
I think this is a great observation by Sarah. Cause like, this is not something.
No, true. Yeah. And shout out to Sarah, consistent writer of feedback. So thanks, Sarah. Cause yeah, this was a very good observation. Cause honestly, even with the finale, we're not going to get into it, but I don't even like the fact that they sealed his chakra and like his back hitting the point, him getting his bending powers back. I didn't like that, like, writing overall or the lead up to that, but we'll get there when we get there. Yeah. No need to stop down on it now. So
yeah. About like a year too early, almost, talking about that.
Yeah, exactly. We're a couple of months early for sure on that.
Last person to write in is Lydia. She wrote, what is the most creative use of water adjacent water bending aside from swamp, plant bending and blood bending? She suggested a few. She said soup bending, umbrella bending, or watermelon bending. Zach, any of those tickle your fancy, or you want to go out of the box here?
So what do you do with watermelon bending? I don't understand. The other two I understand, but watermelon is like you're just trying to find the watermelon with the perfect consistency, but with like bending instead of like shaking it. Is that what we're doing here?
Yeah, I have no idea. I have the luxury.
I'm just curious.
I have the luxury that I could like ask Lydia. I like sort of asked her what she meant, and she just meant that you could bring watermelon to you. So I think it's more of like an on-delivery food service more than anything else.
I mean, that is pretty useful. I feel like of those three that Lydia floated out, rain bending would be the most useful, because if you're a water bender, you don't even need an hypothetical. Let's say you forget your umbrella at home. I assume you can just bend the rain off of you and like make yourself like almost always dry. So that would be very useful. I'm trying to think of my own unique thing. Give me a moment. Right. Jacob, do you have any unique version of water bending that you could float out there?
I was thinking about ways to get rid of household chores. I know that we said that, you know, air bending would be great to get done with household chores, but I think water bending to do the dishes, maybe even laundry bending.
Yes,
I think those are where
I was just thinking about the exact same thing. Water bending to like clean, because I hate cleaning. I do it. I try to be on top of most chores, like dishes and stuff. We currently, me and my roommates, we don't have a dishwasher, so it would be nice if I could just water bend all the dishes clean. Because you see Katara, she water bends stuff pretty quickly. Like water bending, like water bending gets stuff done fast.
So it's efficient.
You're right. No, it is very efficient. So yeah, for that reason, if I was a waterbender in my day-to-day life, I would definitely be using it to clean stuff in a much more efficient manner than my slow ass normally does. So there you go.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a good call. So I think, household cleaning bending would be what Zach and I would opt for. But yeah, if anyone else has a more creative use for waterbending, we'd love to hear it. Any other feedback, please do write it in avatar@postshowrecaps or tweet at us @postshowrecaps with your feedback. We do love hearing it. And this segment is so much fun. Last segment we have for you today is the Tea Quartet. We're going on a little bit of a Marvel stint, the next few weeks. Last week we did Team Iron Man from Captain America Civil War. Now we're doing Team Captain America. So as a reminder, that's going to be Captain America, Scarlet Witch, Hawkeye, and Ant-Man. Those are the four we're doing today.
Should we start with the leader of the bunch, Captain America?
Yeah, let's go for it. What do you have Captain America as?
I have Captain America as my earthbender, and it was kind of tough. I'm not the biggest Marvel fan myself. But Captain America is a character I've always personally found very dull, even within the comics. Not one of my favorite superheroes, but I think Captain America, he's never really driven by emotion, I would say. Yeah. He may be driven by like a love for his country. He's very patriotic, as evidenced by his name and a bunch of other things. But overall, he's not really one, like compared to a lot of the heroes you see in the Marvel universe, a lot of them are hot-headed, a lot of them are emotional, and I think he just exudes a lot of earthbender traits, especially relative to the other superheroes. What about yourself, Jake?
No, I agree. He's definitely the earthbender of the group. You know, he's very by the book, very like,
yes,
you know, stand your ground, determined. He has like a clear view of right and wrong. And I think these are all things that an earthbender has. I don't think that he would be like a Toph or a Bumi. I think he'd more be like the resistance leader that we saw last week.
But But Toph and Boomy are so unique in comparison. Like, yeah. They don't honestly, like, they don't even have, like, the standard earthbending trades. That's why I try not to compare people to those two in the earthbending when we do the T-Quartet, because they're so, it's same with, like, Iroh as a firebender. Like, Iroh is very unlike a lot of the other firebenders we meet. So, but yeah, he is different from those two. I would agree with that.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's the earthbender. The next easiest one that I see, I think, is Ant-Man as the airbender. You know, Ant-Man's like the silly one. He's, you know, he's the guy who's like cracking jokes all the time. I just feel like he's the airbender. He's got that sort of like levity to him. I think that, you know, he doesn't even take himself that seriously. And I think that makes him, like a good slot for that ant.
I agree with Ant-Man as the airbender. And since we're an hour and 40 minutes into this podcast, can I get a little PG-13, maybe a little rated R here, if you don't mind?
Do
you
care? Let's go like PG, like 16 at most. So if it's like okay, very
PG 16 rated. Remember that meme where it was like Ant-Man was like going to beat Thanos by, how can I word this? Crawling into his rectum. I was kind of disappointed the movie didn't go that route. Like, I was kind of hoping they would lean into the memes and do that, because that would have been a hilarious way to defeat this, like, almighty, like, universe conqueror Thanos.
So just
have Ant-Man be the one to beat him.
So just to clarify, what you would have wanted is for Ant-Man to go into Thanos' body and then expand really quickly and tear him apart. That's what you would have wanted the movie to be?
Yes, yeah. Because when I saw that meme, like, trending before the movie came out, I was thinking to myself, like, wow, I kind of wish the writers went this route. But I completely understand. I am in the minority there, but yeah, that's my little Ant-Man aside. To talk about Ant-Man as an airbender, no, I completely agree with you. He's very fun-loving. I think his Hispanic friend, I forget his name, he'd also be in an earthbender or an airbender. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he's very fun-loving. Even his powers, because Ant-Man's powers relative to every other hero are pretty unique. Like, he can go shrink to like a microscopic level. And I feel like he's got a lot of innovating techniques that, like, we see Aang and other airbenders in Avatar The Last Airbender utilize. So, yeah, I think Ant-Man is definitely the clear-cut airbender here.
Yeah.
Is there a place you want to go next?
Yeah, I think the next easiest one is probably with Scarlet Witch as the firebender. You know, I think that she often, like, gets a bit aggressive. Like, she gets, especially if in, the most recent Avengers movie, like, she really does feel the rage when she's, like, met with Thanos again. When she says, like, you took everything from me. I feel like she's the person who's, like, has that sort of quiet rage. She's, like, not always upset, but when she does, like, you definitely don't want to be on her bad side. And I think that's why she's a firebender.
And correct me if I'm wrong, her powers, are they powered up by emotion? I was actually talking to a friend of the podcast, Pat, about this, because he's a bigger Marvel stan than I am. So I was actually picking his brain about Scarlet Witch's powers. So does she get more powerful the more angry she is? Is she something like that?
I definitely do think when she gets angrier, it helps her like be more powerful, but I don't think it's like a requirement.
A direct correlation.
I think it just like is helpful. But yeah,
it's not like Hulk or anything.
Yeah, like no, that. She's definitely not like fueled only by her anger. Like, she definitely has powers when she's not angry. Unlike Hulk, who's always angry.
But yeah, no, I agree with you. Scarlet Witch is definitely our firebender, especially when you compare her to her partner in life and in the TV show WandaVision. Vision, it's like he's so calm and like collected compared to her. I feel like not that she is not calm, but it's just like Vision is so just one note, whereas she's the one of those two who's expressing all the emotion all that. So yeah, no, I definitely have her as our firebender, especially relative to the other three superheroes we're comparing her to. She definitely fits as our firebender.
And no spoilers for WandaVision, but that show is really good. So
I haven't watched the most recent episode, and yeah, it was pretty good. I like the parodies. I really like Catherine Hahn. I think she's a great actress in general.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Last person that we have for you today is Hawkeye. Hawkeye, you know, like, it's a little bit hard to know where Hawkeye stands. He doesn't really seem to have like a ton to go off of, but I do think that his like whole experience as Ronan in the past two movies and like sort of like him using his like sadness to fuel like taking down criminals makes him more of a waterbender than the rest of the people. And that's what I've slotted him as here.
Yeah, and then, like, well, Hawkeye's willing to change up his style, and I feel like that's the trait. I looked up waterbending, talks about it, it's the element of change, that's one thing. Like, at one point, he goes through, like, this whole transformation, he shaves his head, and does something like that, right? Yeah. Am I crazy? He goes through a whole little thing in the movies, and, yeah, I think out of everybody here, he exudes the most waterbending traits. Admittedly, waterbending, I always feel like, is the toughest person or toughest bending type to slot people into, because a lot of people, very few are like, you see them, you're like, that person screams waterbender. Sometimes we see it, it's rare, whereas firebender and airbender, those are kind of always the easiest of any quartet.
Yeah,
so it's like, admittedly, he is kind of tougher, but I feel like, yeah, he's willing to change, he's willing to do what it takes, he's fueled by his like sadness and stuff, which I feel like, just like we see Katara in the TV show, she's also fueled by her sadness when it comes to her waterbending and the loss of her mother. So yeah, but out of everybody here, he is the most waterbendery. Admittedly, it's not the best slot for him. Maybe he could be another bending type, but compared to the other three here, he definitely is a waterbender.
Yep, agreed with you there. So just to recap, what we have is we have Steve Rogers, Captain America, as our earthbender. We have Clint Barnes, Hawkeye, as our waterbender. We have, I shouldn't have started with their real names. Scott Lang, Ant-Man, as the airbender. We have Wanda Maximoff, also known as Scarlet Witch, as the firebender.
I would not have been able to say any of their real names, so bravo, Jacob. Oof. I'll give you a little one-man applause there.
Oh, thank you. You know,
I would have just started. You know what I would have defaulted to? Their actors' names, I feel like.
Yeah.
I would have been like, yeah, Paul Rudd is our airbender, blah, blah, blah. But good job there.
Hey,
that's all for us today.
I'm just trying to do whatever I can to get applause. You know, that felt great, Zach.
Yeah, no, I mean, you deserved. That was like, admittedly deserved applause, because I would not have been able to do that. On that note, yeah, we're pretty much done here. This was a fun podcast. I enjoyed this, honestly. Yeah. I mean, we went on a little bit, but I had a fun time here. This was a solid podcast. Good episode, great podcast.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Next week, just for the T Quartet, we'll be doing Guardians of the Galaxy. Yes, there are five people. We'll have a plan for that next week.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. I ain't too worried.
Yeah. But that's what you can expect next week. Until then, thank you so much for listening. We love the feedback. Zach, I had a fun time podcasting with you today. This is, I think, one of our more fun podcasts. So,
yeah, I agree. I mean, I laughed a bunch. If I'm laughing, that means I'm having fun.
Yeah.
Where can the people find you on Twitter,
Jake? They can find me at JK Redman. You can also listen to the latest episode of Renap and find out if I'm an asshole or if I'm not. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, I gotta listen to that. I usually listen to them at night, but yesterday I was just watching Avatar. I was a little late to that, so I did that rather than finish the AITA podcast, but I'm very excited to get into that. I didn't even know you were appearing on it. That was just a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, you know, didn't publicize it a ton before. I didn't have any like wheel ideas or anything, just came on to, you know, find out if I'm in the wrong. So a pretty simple appearance there, but it was lots of fun. Zach, where can they find you?
People can find me at ZachMohammed32 on Twitter. Yeah, I try to be a little more active on Twitter. I'm not the best, but shout out to the Rob Has a Podcast community as a whole on Twitter. I think I don't like Twitter as a platform, but I like all the people, like following all my favorite podcasters and all the interaction from them and the fans is really cool. And it's such a great little community we have here. So thanks to everybody involved with that. And yeah, we'll see all you guys later. Peace out.
See ya.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.